Hey y'all, this is Josiah Gray and this is Half Street High Heat. Hope you enjoy today's episode.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to another episode of Half Street High Heat, episode 154. I actually looked it up this time, so I would be prepared, and I wouldn't give a random number that was not the number of the episode. So I am prepared today. And today I'm just joined by Ryan. However, we are doing things a little bit different. We recorded the second half of our episode first because Amanda had to bounce a little early, so we wanted to do our draft first because that's obviously the meat of the episode, and that's the part where we get really into it. And obviously that's where our Twitter result, our Twitter vote will come from. So thought we should do that first. And then Ryan and I are going to clean up another masterful tank job by the Nats over the week as they drop 2 of 3 from the Marlins in that series. But like I said, I am joined by Ryan. He's always here when you need him. He's always there when you don't want him. Ryan, how you doing?
I'm doing well. The thriving, not surviving, continues on. I got my haircut and my barber was giving me a word of advice as he finished. She was like, all right. He goes, remember, eat good, look good, get your hair cut often. And I was like, you know what?
It sounds like a Julie Chen Moonves sign off.
I was like, all right, you know, I'll give you a couple extra dollars here in tip now because that made me laugh. So yeah, listen to your barber, eat good, live good, get your hair cut often. I was sitting in my car driving home. I just laughed at that again. I was like, no, that wasn't what I was expecting when my hair got finished.
It's like, all right, I need a new barber.
Well, it's not my normal one. My normal one always calls me handsome when she finishes, and it makes me feel so good. So now I got life advice.
Don't you love when people call you handsome when you finish?
Oh, it's so great. She finishes my haircut. She's like, all right, handsome. And then dust the hair off. It's just great.
Oh man, I'm glad we recorded the second half of the episode first. Oh man. Well, I mean, how's the haircut? That's what really matters here. Like, are we only going crisp. Back? Oh, crisp. Okay, good, good. Yeah. It's always a risk when you go to a new barber and you don't really know, but you also don't want to reschedule because you're already looking a little shaggy. And you know, we have a homie date tonight, so obviously you gotta look good. Yeah. So I respect your commitment to your craft and to your drip, that you're looking good. But a lot of teams are not looking good right now. Well, some teams are, some teams aren't. That's where we get the wild card race. Today's quick pitch, we're just going to recap the wild card race because quite honestly, the Cardinals came out of nowhere. And that's just one of the
I'm so mad we didn't see that coming.
Yeah, that's one of the many storylines. It just seems like, it's something we should have saw coming. And it's also not that surprising. I think that's kind of what the general consensus is. Like, the Cardinals have that experience. I think over the Yankees just clinched their 29th winning season in a row. The Cardinals are up there too. Like, they rarely ever suck, and they're obviously not as good as they have been in years past this year, but to assume that they were just going to completely roll over and die is a little bit of foolery on our part. So obviously they've taken the NL second spot in the NL wild card. The Dodgers still have the first spot, as you know, they are at 94 wins in a wild card spot, which is unreal. But you still have the Padres half a game behind, Reds game behind, Phillies 2.5 behind, Mets even 5 behind, even though they are below 500. So it is still wide open. The AL wild card is a little bit closer as far as or what teams are still involved. Toronto's still hanging on to that top spot, Boston right there as well. And then the Yankees half a game behind the Red Sox, A's 3 games back, Mariners 4 games back, but I don't think either of those teams catch up. So if we just had to put our predictions down, what do you think the wild card matchup is going to be? Obviously, the NL one's going to either be in San Fran or LA, but who do you think is the wild card teams, and where do you think the wild card game is played?
So I'm starting in the NL. When the Nats are making the playoffs, I kind of just root for the team with like the rowdiest fans and whoever's going to like have the most entertaining home games to watch. Mm-hmm. But that will relate more to the AL teams. So there is a pivotal playoff implication series tonight. The Padres head to St. Louis for a 3-game series. Yep. Cardinals have the second spot. Padres are half a game back. The Padres are starting Vince Velasquez and Jake Arrieta. Things are not doing well. I really want the Padres to get that second spot, but I think their pitching just isn't enough. I was very surprised they did not address their pitching. Yu Darvish, who I really, really enjoy watching pitch, has not been the same.
I thought they acquired Max Scherzer.
That's right. The sources, they are close to Max Scherzer. Do you think they're mad about that, by the way? Just Max has become like a god for the Dodgers. And
I mean, they have to be like, even if they, I don't interact with many Padres fans, but even if they try to claim like they didn't want Max or whatever, like it's just so in their face now because, like you said, he's dominating, but also because he's on the Dodgers, and like the Padres and Dodgers were back and forth all season long. And now the Dodgers are at 94 wins and the Padres are what, like 76. So even if the Dodgers lost out and the Padres won out, like they still wouldn't catch them. They have to be upset.
I mean, it's just, that's tough. I really want them to get the second wildcard spot. They're good for baseball. Obviously they have Tatis. Like, that is good for baseball if Tatis is playing games on the national stage. But I think the Cardinals get that second spot, which irritates me. Dodgers are currently only 1 game back. I think the Dodgers win the NL West. So I think we'll have a San Francisco, St. Louis, two very storied franchises that kind of dominated the early 2000s and 2010s going at it in what's their stadium called now? It's Oracle. Oracle. The American League one is fascinating. You have the quote heavyweights of the last 20 years, the Red Sox and the Yankees, and then the exciting up and coming Blue Jays, who their lineup is bumping on all accords. Their pitching rotation's doing well. Robbie Ray might win the Cy Young out of nowhere. They currently have it just because they have one less loss than the Red Sox because they played one less game. I think they hold on to it. I really think the Blue Jays hold on to it and host the wildcard game. I really wanted a Yankee Stadium Red Sox wildcard game just because that would have been absurdly hostile. Mm-hmm. But Rogers Center is no stranger to being hostile crowd, I should say. But I think the Yankees get the second wildcard spot. The Red Sox have a lot of issues with their pitching staff. So do the Yankees. But at the end of the day, the Yankees have Gerrit Cole.
Yeah. So wait, so what was your final prediction? It's Red Sox Toronto, at Blue Jays?
No, sorry. Toronto, Yankees, and Toronto.
Okay. All right. So you have the Red Sox missing. So for NL, we talked about it on the show, like the ideal matchup is Padres in LA against the Dodgers, and then Red Sox in New York against the Yankees, or even vice versa. Like, you can kind of flip those if you want, especially with how close they are in the standings. But it's impossible to root against Toronto. Like, I'd much rather see the Yankees fall out of it than I would see the Blue Jays fall out of it. So now that the Blue Jays are in it, they've kind of closed the gap, and so much so that they're in the quote unquote lead right now, even though it's pretty much spitting distance with each other. I want the Blue Jays to hold on. I think it's funnier if the Yankees fall out of it than if the Red Sox do. So I'm going to say Red Sox in Toronto. Still a divisional matchup. Rogers Center is going to be bumping. People forget Toronto is really close to Buffalo. So all of like the crazy Bills mafia people and whatnot, like that kind of carries over Toronto and vice versa. So Toronto Rogers Center, if you don't remember like the mid 2010s with Joey Bat Flips and kind of those playoff runs.
Remember they had to call the police on the field to calm the place down because yep. Fans running on the field and throwing stuff on the field after his home run.
Absurd. So I'm here for it. Obviously, we get fans back in the stands for this year's playoffs, like a full capacity, or at least a majority of the stadium, as opposed to last year when we had like 5,000-10,000 fans at most, if at all, for the playoffs. I think we only got fans back for the championship or wild card series, so we didn't even have it for the wild card games. And obviously that's a game 7 environment. Ryan knows this well. He was there for the 2019 wild card game. So putting a packed Rogers Center for a Toronto home playoff game, I mean, that's going to be electric no matter who they're playing. And again, I think the Yankees falling out of it would be very funny for baseball. So that's my prediction for the AL. For the NL, I keep saying like the Dodgers are going to win the division, but like the Giants just aren't giving them any openings. Like they're not running away from it because they can't, because the Dodgers are just that good, but they're not giving them any opportunity, any openings to really, you know, for the Dodgers to take back the division. Like when they play head to head, I think the Giants are up 9-8 on the season series. So it's literally even. So I think that the Giants hold on, pending like obviously a crazy collapse here, but I think the Giants hold on, which means the wild card game is in LA. And that really, really makes me want to pick the Padres, but I just don't know if the Padres can get there. So yeah, I think I'm just going to go, I'm going to have to go with the hot hand, so to speak, the team that's playing the best right now. That's obviously the Cardinals. It's not exciting. I want the Padres in the wild card game, but I also just want Tatis on that stage. He would be the biggest star of any of the four teams. So the Cardinals, Padres, Reds, and Phillies, he would be the biggest star of those four teams. So that's who I would want, but I think the Cardinals get it. So I'm going to say Cardinals at Dodgers and Red Sox at Toronto, which is still two pretty good matchups. I mean, even Brewers Nats, which have no like rivalry whatsoever, that was a pretty good wild card matchup. So game seven environment always leads to good stuff. But speaking of good stuff, Ryan brings it every single episode. You know what's coming, but we don't, because Ryan enlightens us. Ryan's going to give us our weekend review. What's going on?
Yes, it is another mid-week review as we are entering mid to late September. The average cost of attending a baseball game increased in 2021 over the previous years. This is no surprise as teams try to make up money lost during the pandemic. Prices are up by 4% across the league over what they were expected to be in 2020. The cost of a family of four to attend a game is on average $238. That's a lot of money. The American League Cy Young race looks like it'll be between Robbie Ray and Gerrit Cole. If Robbie Ray wins, he'll be the fifth pitcher from the 2014 Tigers to win a Cy Young. Absurd. Corbin Burns leads all qualified NL pitchers in strikeouts and walks per nine innings. The only other AL or NL pitcher to lead their league in both of those was Walter Johnson all the way back in 1913. We are seeing a pitcher and a position player both in the hunt for the Triple Crown, and there's a very real chance that neither of them win Cy Young or MVP. Cubs are the first team as far back as Baseball Reference Tracks Baseball to blow multiple games when leading by five or more runs and lose them by seven or more. The Blue Jays, Red Sox, and Yankees are all essentially tied for a wild card spot. As we just mentioned, the Red Sox have nine games left with the Orioles and the Nats, and the Yankees play 12 of their 15 remaining games against teams above 500. My team, I did predict to make the wild card game. Bad news for them, the Blue Jays schedule is rather easy as well. The Cardinals, as we all should have seen coming, are now in the second spot for the wild card National League. San Diego is just half a game behind, and the Reds fall to a game back. Tatis is single-handedly trying to carry the Padres offense to get them back in the spot. To the NL East, in fifth place are the 60 and 86 Nats. More on them in a second. In fourth place are the 62 and 84 Marlins. They took 2-3 from the Nats, and they have the Pirates up next in another tankathon match. In third place are the 72 and 55. Their playoff hopes essentially took a massive blow as they got swept by the Cardinals. Mets are looking for front office stability in the offseason. Wonder why. And they are rumored to be interested in bringing Billy Bean to the front office. In second place are the 74 and 72 Phillies. They lost 2-3 from the Cubs, but they have the Mets and the O's next. And due to the Braves' inability to win games, the Phillies are only three games back somehow. Bryce Harper had his MVP game in a big come from behind victory against the Cubs. His OPS is now up to 1.058. In first place are the 76 and 68 Braves. A bad home trip leaves them stuck in the divisional race they should have put away by now, as they got swept by the Rockies. And now, sucks for them. They have to go out west to face the Giants in a massive 3-game series. This has been your week in review. Make sure you guys head on over to T Public and search Half Street High Heat and keep up with all of our latest designs, swag, and all of the gear that we are publishing new designs for weekly. This has been your week in review.
Do you think Tatis is going to, if the Padres and Phillies don't make the postseason, and that obviously includes wildcard game, so you kind of are in an even playing field there. Harper has played more games than Tatis. Tatis has definitely had the bigger moments, so to speak. Or at least it's been more publicized. Obviously, he's kind of the face of baseball now, and deservedly so, by the way. Who's your favorite for MVP right now is what I'm trying to ask.
So as of right now, where everything stands, Bryce Harper is the favorite. He leads the league in WRC plus OPS. And he's also third in the batting title. He's hitting .314 of the year. He's tied with Juan Soto, and I think Trey Turner leads.
Imagine if they were on the same team.
Max Muncy has kind of fallen out of it. He's not playing very well over his last 30 games, nonetheless, his last 7 games. Tatis is in second. If the Padres make the playoffs, Tatis will win the NL MVP. If both miss the playoffs, Bryce wins very easily, I believe, with Tatis coming in second. I think Juan Soto gets third. But yeah, right now, Bryce Harper is the favorite. If both miss, Bryce, Padres make it, they'll give it to Tatis because the playoff contribution that all the riders weigh in MVP, because that's kind of what the Hank Aaron Award is for. It's for the really, really good guys who would have won MVP if they're on, you know, right, better teams.
Best hitters, so to speak.
Yeah, like Juan Soto is probably going to get the Hank Aaron Award this year, but no playoff factors, Bryce wins it easily.
Yeah, and I mean, that's going to come down to the wire. It's crazy. I mean, Bryce's only real MVP season was the year he won, obviously. Like, he never top 3, never top 5, never top 10 otherwise. And I think that's where people try to argue, oh, well, he wasn't worth it, wasn't worth it. But then he does this. And it's kind of just like, well, we told you. And in, what was it, 2017, he was phenomenal until freaking slipped on first base. And that's really what did him in, because he was who won the MVP in 2018? Was that Yelich?
18 was Yelich.
Yelich had the absurd like Barry Bonds like run. So I can't
say. Yeah, 18 was Yelich, 19 was Bellinger.
Yeah, so I can't say like Harper definitely would have won, but he absolutely was on pace. Like, so 2018, he was 2017. Sorry, 2017 is the year he slept. All right, I'm mixing my dates here. But anyways, point being, this is what Bryce Harper was capable of. He always has been. We knew he would get back there eventually. It's crazy to see what he's doing basically by himself, because even someone like JT Realmuto, who was the best catcher in baseball, maybe still is, but was the best catcher in baseball, not only because of his defense, but because of how much he provided offensively compared to everyone else. Like, he's not really doing anything. Reese Hoskins out for the year. McCutcheon, who is another big free agent signing, he's kind of just fallen off from what he used to be. List goes on and on. It's basically just Harper offensively, and somehow the Phillies are still in it, mainly because no one else wants to run away with it, but in it nonetheless. So I do think it's probably Harper right now. But agreed, if the Padres do make the postseason, it will swing back into Tatis's favor. But moving on to the Nats, one thing we've talked about, and we've definitely mentioned it, that we're embracing the tank plenty, but what does that mean? People just assume we're rooting for the Nats to suck for just the sake of the Nats sucking, just because they know Shaq's brand and the pessimism and pessimism realism aspect to Shaq. But the Nats currently have the 5th pick in the draft order for 2022, which no small feat. That's obviously going to hopefully lead them to a top prospect, especially if any of the top 4 go under slot, which basically means they reach on a player who they can get for a little bit cheaper. And we all know these teams are cheap. The top four right now, Baltimore, Arizona, Pittsburgh, Texas, all very cheap franchises. The Orioles went under slot this year. The Diamondbacks sort of went over slot this year because they had a guy fall to them. So they may be a candidate to go under slot next year. Pittsburgh is probably the cheapest organization in baseball, and they don't really get talked about a lot for that fact. They're always a candidate to go under slot. They went under slot this year. They could have had one of the young shortstops at the number one pick. They chose the catcher out of Louisville, which not necessarily a bad pick, but again, under slot. And then Texas, they had Jack Leiter and someone else, I believe. So they've gone big in their draft as well. So the Nats could end up with a very top prospect should things stand the way they are. And they did themselves sort of a favor in that regard because currently they are two games below Miami in the standings. So if you're doing the reverse order, they are two games ahead of Miami for the fifth pick. So that's where they currently have it. They dropped 2 of 3 to Miami this week. So that helps that fact. Nats just love losing 2 of 3, which is kind of like the perfect.
It's their brand,
right? It's the perfect medium or middle ground, I should say. Like, they're not getting swept, so fans won't get too mad at them, but they're still dropping series and dropping games, especially when they're, like I said, they're playing against the Marlins, who they're kind of fighting for a top pick for. So it's literally like, okay, we don't completely suck. We really suck, but we don't completely suck. And, you know, we still get the end result. Guys are getting good experience and whatnot. What were your kind of overall takeaways from the series? I know it's kind of like the same thing over and over again, but was there anything that really stood out to you about the series?
Yeah, so the Nats, they have not won a series since they 2-game swept the Blue Jays in the beginning of August. They have not won a 3-game series since they won 2-3 against the Cubs around the deadline. So the Nats are kind of all in on this tank. And
some would say they're embracing it.
They're full-blown embracing it. They're running away with the tank. Like, they're literally driving they, off into the sunset.
They're picking up the tank and running with it.
But one of the biggest reasons, and probably the largest contributor to it, is the bullpen. And I love stats. So I was looking at some stats. And this is just in the second half alone. Mind you, these stats I'm telling you are just the second half alone. Okay.
I know it's one of the worst, but go ahead.
So their bullpen in the second half has 20 losses. That is worse in baseball. The second worst has 14 losses. They have 4.6 walks per nine. That is the worst in base, the worst in the second half. They also they give up 1.84 home runs per nine inning. That is the worst in the second half. Their ERA is a 6.22, second worst. That is the second worst behind the Orioles. Their FIP, fielding independent pitching, is 5.80. That is the worst in baseball. And their WAR is -1.7 in the second half. That is the worst in baseball. The next closest WAR is -0.8 by the Pittsburgh Pirates. It's not even close across the board. It's bad, folks. And their left on base percentage is just 62%. That's the second worst in baseball in the second half behind the Orioles, who lost 20 games in a row. The Dodgers lead baseball with their bullpen in the second half with left on base percentage at 80%. And that's 62%. So they're allowing 38% of the runners to score that are on base when they enter. It's bad.
Yeah, like, we keep laughing, but if you can't laugh, like, you're not going, you're just miserable. Like, we don't want to be miserable. So we're just,
but then, like,
it's commendable what they're doing. You know,
and then you're like, well, maybe they're pitching too much, you know?
No.
They
well they are pitching too much, but it's not overuse.
In the second half, they've thrown 205 innings, right? That's the 10th least in baseball. So, like, they've had some issues with the starting rotation, not going deep in the games. They're not one of those teams, really. Like, the Giants bullpen has 251 innings in the second half alone. I had to double check that. I couldn't believe that was for the second half.
Yep.
But yeah, it's bad, folks. Like, it's that is really impressive.
All you can do is laugh. Like, it's just what are you gonna do? I mean, it's not gonna change. Obviously, we're a month and a half since the deadline. Like, this is, I'm not gonna say this is who they are, because I think some of these players will kind of develop more. But when you have, and no disrespect meant here, but when you have nobody's pitching high leverage situations, what do you expect?
Yes.
So it's just like you have to accept it. Even if you didn't want to sell at the deadline, which we're way past, but if you didn't want that, you have to readjust for what's happening now. You can't just expect, you know, Mason Thompson to be Daniel Hudson. And, well, I was going to say like Baldonado to be Brad Hand, but Baldonado kind of is Brad Hand with how bad Brad Hand's been. But like, you can't just expect these guys to step in and be elite. If they were really that elite, they would have been in the bullpen in the first place, and we probably wouldn't have sold at the deadline. But this is who they are. Like, it's not about performance right now. It's about the development. And these guys, while I'm sure it's not fun to suck and to lose all these games and to constantly drop series, they're getting valuable reps. And that's what the Nats ownership and front office and coaching staff made a concerted organizational mindset to have, that, listen, you know, we're not playing for a World Series in 2021 anymore. Like, we are playing for the future and getting these guys important developmental time, so that way they can get better, but also we can get a better read on their ability. Like, they sent Victor Robles down. If they were trying to compete, you would think they would have Victor Robles up, and that we've talked about that, but that's just goes to my point. Like, they know they're not going to win. And that was the point of selling at the deadline. So if they're not trying to win, like, for the people that are still so upset with the Nats, like, why are you expecting that we're going to win? Cause we're not. And all we can do is laugh. Cause it's just like, this is so new and so unheard of, but unexpected from where we began the season. It's just like, enjoy it for what it is. Like, it's just crazy what can happen when you don't have established guys, and it also makes you appreciate what we have when we have it a little bit more, which is why everyone's like so upset that Trey Turner is getting recognition now. Like, they never really truly appreciated Trey Turner. They kind of just expected him to be like this godsend to save the team from selling, which everyone knows, no matter how good you are in baseball, you can't do it alone. Like, freaking Mike Trout might very well be the greatest baseball player of all time, and he's only made the playoffs once in his whole career. He's played 10 or 11 years now. It's just the way it goes, and it's going for the Nats. It certainly is. But we got good starting pitching. So it's like, at least there's something to not entirely be miserable about. Espino had another masterclass, which in Paolo Espino terms is, you know, 5 to 6 innings with one run. And it doesn't really matter what else happens, but he went 6 innings, 6 hits, 1 run, 3 walks, 6 Ks. So not a bad outing at all. Nats still lost the game. They're getting no hit until like the 8th, but you know, that's besides the point. Next game, Eric Fetty had a rare good outing, which is 5 innings, 3 hits, 1 run, no walks, 8 strikeouts. So that was very rare. Good to see. That was the one win of the series, mainly because that was the game we put up 8 runs. And then Josh Rogers came out of nowhere. Don't even know who he is, really. 5 innings, 1 run, or excuse me, 1 hit, no runs, no walks, 6 strikeouts. So it's like, there is, I'm not going to say hope, but like something to, You're like, all right, now that wasn't entirely miserable. But then you get to the bullpen, and like we talked about, it is miserable. But like, what did you think of these starting pitchers and their performances? I mean, I don't think any of them are locks to be pieces for the future, but certainly, like I said, it wasn't entirely miserable to watch.
I mean, Espino, we talked about, like, he's a type of guy that every team would love. He can go out there and he can get you five or six innings when you
he's
really
like
need it.
Use Mero Petit for exactly. Those who remember him.
Like, he can come out of the bullpen, get a couple innings if your starter can't go long. If you need to have a bullpen day, he can go out there. He's kind of a really important guy for a team. He's not going to be in, you know, your top five rotation, but he's definitely a number six or a number seven guy. And that's very, very valuable when it comes to pitching depth, because pitching injuries are going to happen. Like, you're not going to be able to avoid those at all. And that's a guy that's very important. Eric Fedde, we've talked about the ups and the downs with Fedde a lot. I still think Eric Fedde is a perfect number five starter. I don't really think he'll be much more than that, which is what really sucks. I think he's 28 or 29. Pitchers are different, and a lot of guys hit that second gear as they get past 30, but he hasn't really shown that first gear yet. He's gotten it a couple times, but he keeps getting stuck. So that's been really, really unfortunate. But like you said, Josh Rogers is very surprising. He has a 2.6 ERA, granted three starts, 17 innings, but like, he's gone at least five in every single start. Against Miami, he went five innings, gave up one hit, one walk, struck out six, no runs. The Nats lost 8-6. that's just absolutely unreal. And then against the Pirates, he went 6 2/3, gave up two. Against the Mets, a good team, well, good lineup, 5.2, three innings. That was his first start in a long time. Rogers is someone I think is going to watch because he does have good stuff. I think he's not like the most attractive piece for when you are looking at your pitching staff, but I honestly think he has a legitimate shot to be on this team's pitching staff next year. I think he'll be more of a bullpen piece rather than a starting pitcher, but again, he can be your six or seven on a good team. You take that. Even on the bad team, he could be your six and you're fine with that. I've been pleasantly surprised with him. You know, he has a 1.04 whip and 17 innings, rather solid. I think Rogers is a very, very pleasant surprise. And Nick, you talked about how this season's about individual results, and Josh Rogers right now is one of the biggest surprises right now, and a pretty fun story to watch, because I had no idea who he was until the Nats were like, hey, Josh Rogers is starting for us. And I was like, whoo!
I don't even know who you are. man. Yeah. It's what it comes down to. Like, it's good to see, but the bullpen has just been so atrocious that the end result is about the same, but it's not all bad. Like, that's the point we're trying to make. And we're kind of just like trying to reiterate, like, it's not all bad. There can be good that comes out of us, and people don't really understand what embrace the tank entails. And that's what we're, again, what we're trying to explain. Like, embrace the tank just means, one, we get a better draft pick, but two, don't be so invested on wins and losses. Like, look at the silver lining, the individual performances, even if it's a negative or a bad individual performance, it's still good reps. It's still good, important stuff. Like Finnegan, Ryan pointed out a couple weeks ago, like, he's not going to be a closer, but he's closing games. That's good experience. He blew the game Thursday.
Yes.
And I mean, one run, four, or he gave it four runs, blew the game, right? But he's still getting valuable experience as a closer, and that's something he'll be able to take with him, because he can treat in the seventh inning next year, if that's his role, he can treat that like the ninth inning. He kind of, you know, knows how to lock it down and to step up and whatnot. So these are still good reps. The lineup, which has been surprisingly decent since the deadline, they're kind of not consistent this series. Like we talked about on Tuesday, I'm getting my days mixed up. They were getting no hit, but it was Alcantara, so it made a little bit more sense. But there's a couple guys we wanted to highlight. We're going to play a game.
Okay.
We're going to play a game. So I'm calling it backing or packing. Are you backing these players? Are you sending them packing? See what I did there?
Well, hold on a second. Before we start.
What?
Talking about the bright spots in the lineup. I have a stat.
Okay, go for it.
So talking about bright spots, it's basically Juan Soto, but yes. Josh Bell, since June 1st, that is 350 plate appearances. That is a rather attractive sample size. Attractive is the word today. That's a very solid sample size when you can draw conclusions about a player. So that he's hitting in those 350 plate appearances, 278, 362, 529. He has a 134 WRC plus, league average is 100. He has a 377 weighted on OBA. He has 11.8 walk percentage and a 14.9% K percentage. The league average strikeout percentage is around 22%. And the walk percentage is around 10%. So respect Josh Bell. He's been well above league average since June 1st. And I just saw that stat and I wanted to throw it out there because you were talking about bright spots in the lineup, but let's play our game.
But Ryan, I was told Josh Bell should be designated for assignment and that he was no better than Matt Adams.
That's right. I was told he should be non-tendered, and I am here to tell you that Josh Bell is good, and you should be pretty happy he's your first baseman.
One of the dumbest takes I have ever seen. Just truthfully, like, there's always some dumb takes. There's always the freezing cold takes amongst Nat's Twitter. But to actually publish an article saying he's no better than Matt Adams and he should be designated for assignment is unreal. Unreal. Like, you just don't know ball. But we do. That's what we're going to play, backing or packing. Like I said, are you going to back these players? Or are you going to send them packing? So we're going to start with one that's kind of been a revelation for multiple reasons. One, it got John Lester out of town. But two, he's actually been pretty solid. Former top 10 prospect within the St. Louis Cardinals organization. Obviously, that is Lane Thomas. With Victor Robles up in the air, center field job seems wide open. Although Robles has been doing well in AAA, but it is AAA. Plenty of people do well in AAA and don't make it in the big leagues. Are you backing Lane Thomas or are you sending him packing?
I am backing Lane Thomas. The center field job is going to be so interesting between them two, but even if he's not the starter next year, he is going to be on this roster. In his last 62 ABs, he's hitting 306, 389, 581. That's pretty good. So I am backing him, and I think he is going to be on this team next year.
Yeah, I am as well. I'm not necessarily sold that he's a solution in center field, but if he keeps playing like this, then he's certainly not a harm in center field either. And he can play all three outfield positions. He's really what you look for from a fourth outfielder. So if he can develop into an everyday outfielder, then obviously that's a huge win, and he can play center, not to the defensive level that Victor Robles can, but he's playing a fine center field, and that's fine if we can get what he's been doing at the top of the lineup and offensively. So I will back one Lane Thomas. Another guy, and I know he's your favorite, Alcides Escobar, which I understand.
See you later.
I understand where he came from, what the situation was. He hadn't played in 2 years. This is probably just a flash in a pan. It probably won't happen again, but there is an opportunity. If Luis Garcia and Escobar kind of have this rapport and Garcia can learn from Escobar and Escobar is fine playing that mentor role, would you back him and have him fill a bench spot? Because it seems like we haven't had a true backup shortstop or middle infielder in some time. So would you back Alcides Escobar, or do you want the Nats to completely move on and you want to send him packing?
I want to send him packing mainly because I am a very consistent man. I care more about my narratives than anything else, but I would not be surprised in the bit if the Nats signed him early in the offseason and just secured a backup infielder, kind of like they did with Josh Harrison. Like, they announced they signed Josh Harrison before free agency even started. Someone just kind of on a cheap deal who you know will be depth, can play in multiple positions. I would not be very surprised about that. I don't want him here. Like, yeah. I said, my narratives over your facts, I don't care.
You are consistent. I think it's we face this decision every single year. Like last year, it was Asdrubal Cabrera. Before that, it was, who's another one? I guess kind of Kurt Suzuki, or who are some other flash in the pan guys we've had?
A lot. Nats are really good at getting those.
Yeah, which they are, but like you also have to know when to let go, which they've been okay with. Not the great, but not the worst. Like you really have to just know when to move on. There is a reason Alcides Escobar was in like double A with the Royals, who he won a World Series with. Like there was a reason for that. And this is kind of just, he's having a good stretch of baseball, but again, there's a reason for it. Everyone's going to revert back to the mean at some point or another. So as long as you replace him as far as that role, both a starting middle infielder and that veteran leadership or that experience to kind of help these young guys out, then that's what matters. But I'm fine with sending him packing. Another guy. And this one is a little bit more of a conversation because he hasn't been doing that poorly, at least offensively, not great defensively, but he can be serviceable. And should the DH come next year, he isn't in that conversation. But if the DH doesn't come for whatever reason, he's just complete liability in the outfield. And that's Yadiel Hernandez. Are you backing Yadiel Hernandez or are you sending him packing?
So his numbers over his last 30, 15 and 7 games are rather abysmal, to be honest with you. He's cooling down a bit offensively. He doesn't have a spot defensively. He's a 33-year-old rookie, but I am honestly, I'm backing him. Like we've seen in 226 ABs this year, his offense truly hasn't been that bad. Like he has a 742 OPS, 8 home runs. That's fine. If he's the team's DH next year, that kind of tells you how bad this team's going to be, but I'm backing him. His bat has shown that he can play at a major league level. If this team is going to be more patient in its rebuild and address things slowly, there's no problem at all with him being a DH or even being someone that you know you can go to in a pinch hitter role. But if Lane Thomas and Yadiel Hernandez both stay, Andrew Stevenson's time as Nat is officially over, which darn.
Crazy to think he like leads the team in pinch hit hits. Isn't he like first or second?
His numbers are like really good as a pinch hitter, which shows how bad his numbers are when he's not a pinch hitter. But yeah, I'm backing Yadiel Hernandez for next season.
Interesting. I agree with you. If he is this team's DH, this team is not going very far. That's no disrespect to Yadiel. It's just no legitimate contender is going to have Yadiel Hernandez as a DH. Just kind of the way it goes, unfortunately. But he's been fine. It's just he is a complete liability defensively. It pains me watching him play defense. But if he can provide serviceable offense, I think he'll be fine. So, yeah, I'll back him. Because we're all about the process here. Trust the process. And Yadiel Hernandez is part of that. Late bloomer, he's the old guy of the bunch, but he is part of the process nonetheless. All right, let's move on to pitching. And this first guy, certainly not a great season, but we also don't necessarily have anyone to replace him. That's how he's consistently got opportunities. And he's had stretches of good performances, but overall the numbers still aren't that great. That's Sam Clay. We need a lefty reliever. Every ball club does. He's our only one. He sort of replaced Sean Doolittle and is performing even worse than Doolittle did in his final season with us. I assume we're not necessarily backing Sam Clay, but can we necessarily afford to send him packing?
So this season in 57 games, that's 47 innings. He has a 5.6 ERA and a 1.69 whip. In his last 15 games, he has a 7.36 ERA and a 1.9 whip. Sam Clay's not good. That's kind of just how it is. He's going to be on the team next year because he is a lefty reliever. They don't really have anyone to replace him. And I think with the amount of holes his team has and the fact that I believe the Nats are going to prioritize a back-end reliever piece to sign to a multi-year deal, Sam Clay will be on the roster. So, like, I'm forcibly backing him, if that makes sense.
We have no choice. Yeah, it's just like, what's his ERA? Like a 5.7, something like that?
Yeah, it's not very good.
I mean, you can... it's worth just taking a shot on another lefty reliever flyer. that's what Sam Clay was this year. We didn't have anyone post Doolittle. So it's like, all right, here's a chance on a journeyman guy. I believe it was 1 year, $1 million. Like that, it's not, first of all, he's a free agent. You have to resign him anyways, but two, it's like, it's not a huge loss to move on from, because at the very worst, you're going to get someone who's equally as bad as Sam Clay. So I'll send him packing, knowing we still need to, we're creating a hole, but the hole is kind of already there anyways. It's like a large divot right now anyways. So I'm fine creating a hole if it means I can fix the divot. That makes sense. So next guy, another bullpen piece. Staples, kind of too good of a word, but we've seen a lot of him. He has struggled mightily this season, but has typically been a go-to for Davey in this team. And that's obviously Wander Suero. He's been sent down. He's been called back up. He's been a ninth inning guy. He's been a fifth inning guy. He's been all over the place. He has gotten a lot of experience that people might not expect. I think of the current Nats, he's fifth in games played in the Nats uniform behind Soto, Zim. And I can't even remember who else would be in front of him at this point. But he's up there. He's been with the Nats for a while. He's gotten a lot of experience. And naturally, as most relievers do, he's had a bad season. A lot of receivers, fantasy football mode. A lot of relievers have had bad seasons, and doesn't necessarily predict what they're going to do for the next season or the rest of their career. They're very volatile. Are you backing Wander Suero, or are you sending him packing and just kind of looking elsewhere now that we got a little bit more options?
This is a tough one. Like, his stuff is good. He just doesn't have the command or the consistency to succeed as a reliever. Looking at his numbers this year, he has a negative 1.2 WAR. He has a 6.33 ERA in 42.2 innings. He has 15 walks. You know, his ERA plus is 64. League average is 100. His whip is 1.4. His fielding independent pitching is 5.79. The last couple of years, it's been low threes, which is fine. I don't know. I'm just so torn on him. I feel like he starts the season down in AAA. Like, the potential is there. I just feel like he needs to figure out just to take off a little bit more to get that extra command on his pitches and to really be able to locate better. So I am sending him packing, but to AAA next year to see if he can figure this out and become more consistent.
So it's just a mini vacation.
Yeah, exactly.
Or not necessarily out of town, but it's out of town to Rochester. Next guy, another one we've talked about plenty, and he really had a shot this year to prove that he was a guy, to prove that he was a part of the plans going forward. Even post deadline, he was, you know, someone who had all the opportunities in the world to say, you know, hey, we might not be as good. We have holes to fill, but at least I can fill one of them. Certainly has not done that. And that's Eric Fetty. The starting rotation has plenty of question marks. Once, obviously, our strength now has more questions than arguably our lineup does. Eric Fetty, probably ceiling is a 4 or 5 guy, but right now what we're getting isn't even a 5 guy. Like, it's tough to watch. Do you back Eric Fetty due to the state of the Nats and the starting rotation with injuries and poor performances and no real staples, or are you sending him packing because we've seen enough?
Eric Fetty, like, he's not that good. His numbers this year, 7.9, 5.16 ERA and 122 innings, which is a career high. His previous career high was 78. He doesn't have any more minor league options, so I think he's going to be on the team next year as the number 5 starter. Even if they add someone, I think he's going to be there as the 5 starter just because they don't have any more options. I don't really know if they want to lose a 28 or 29 year old pitcher, even though he has tons of question marks. So I think he is going to be the number 5. It's kind of like with Sam Clay, like, I'm being forced to back him because he has no options.
Don't you love this?
Like, as annoying and frustrating as Eric Fetty can be, because he'll like look great for 4 innings and then inning 5 he gives up, you know, five runs, I think he's going to be in the rotation, even though I think his future, his best is a five, probably a reliever. But yeah, I think he's going to be in the rotation next year as our number five.
Yeah, I agree. There's just too many holes to fix, or all in one offseason. We've talked about that. And now with the rotation being the way it is, like, you kind of have to count on the people you have to be decent or serviceable enough while you fix other areas. But the way this team is shaping up, there's going to be plenty of people that could be potential liabilities, and Eric Fetty is one of them. But it's also a guy we kind of need to be serviceable if we have any hope for next year. And knowing this front office, they're going to try to turn the ship around as quickly as possible. So I guess I'll back him, but not necessarily loving it, especially with Joe Ross out. Like, it was Joe Ross, Austin Voth, or Eric Fetty. Voth, who actually had a good series, two scoreless innings, three strikeouts, no walks. He seems to be a bullpen guy exclusively now. They haven't even tinkered with the idea of moving him back to the rotation. They're starting guys off the street like Sean Nolan, Josh Rogers, and they seem content with leaving Voth in a bullpen role, which he's been okay at this year. So that takes him out of the equation. And obviously with Joe Ross, another UCL injury, he's out of the equation. So it really is just Fetty now. So we are literally being forced to back him. Last guy I want to ask about. You've said it yourself. Any team would love any team would love to have a guy like this, but there's a reason he, you know, was a journeyman minor leaguer for 10 years or how long it's been. Great story, but doesn't necessarily equate prolonged success. How long can they go back to the well on this? Are you expecting, or are you backing King Paolo to return next year, or are you sending him packing and just appreciative of what he was able to do this year?
So, Nick, let me ask you this.
Ask me anything.
AMA. If a starting pitcher the entire season goes six innings and gives up three earned runs in every single start, what's his ERA?
4.5.
Exactly. Right? Those are all quality starts. League average ERA this year is like 4.35. My boy King Paolo has a 4.1 ERA in 97 innings pitches.
So he is quality pitch. Is what you're saying.
He is quality. He is good for five or six innings. I am backing him only as depth. Right. I want to reiterate that if we're going into the season and he is like this team's number four, number five starter, it's going to be a bad year. He's perfect depth. Like, put him in the bullpen, let him be a long inning guy, emergency starter. I am backing him. I truly think he is perfect depth for a team. He's got MLB experience. Again, 100 innings this year, career MLB stats. He has a career 130 MLB pitch innings. The guy's the GOAT. I am backing him as depth.
So you said it's bad news if he's our 4 or 5. Well, what if he's our like number two?
All right. Well, you know what? We're not embracing the tank. They are like, they married the tank if he's the number two.
We are whipped by the tank. Yeah, I'll back him. Like you said, a 4 or 5 is sort of the standard. Like you said, it's the premises for a quality start, or the qualifications for a quality start or whatever. And he's been doing that too. It's not just like he's going three innings, giving up one run, and somehow that qualifies because it's technically a 3 ERA. Like, he's going deep into games consistently, 4 to 6 innings every single time. He hasn't really had those short blow up starts like someone like Patrick Corbin has had plenty of, someone like John Lester had plenty of. Like, Espino's consistently been going not 7-8 like a Max Scherzer did, but he's been going 4 to 6, and that can really spare a bullpen. And we know how bad our bullpen is. You talked about it, and it's just laughable how bad it is. So any opportunity we get to have them pitch less is a good thing. Espino seems to serve that role. I'll back him. He's King Paolo after all. Like, how can you not?
That's my boy.
That's apparently your boy now. Speaking of your boys, you have to take care of the boys down there. Yes, we're talking about Manscaped. Autumn is in the air, sort of. kind of. I mean, it might be false autumn three, as Ryan likes to say, but we're getting there. It's approaching. The pumpkins will be in the patch, and our friends at Manscaped are here to make sure you don't carve your pants pumpkins when you're grooming. See what they did there? If you know what I'm saying, make sure you're keeping things fresh this fall with the leaders in male grooming and the brand new fourth generation performance package. Boys, get ready for a cuffing season like no other. Are you ready to take the leap into fall with Manscaped? Join the 2 million men worldwide using Manscaped by going to manscaped.com for 20% off and free shipping with the code HSHH20. You can get 20% off the performance package, which includes the Lawnmower 4.0, the Weed Whacker, which is their ear, nose, hair trimmer, the Crop Preserver, which is their ball deodorant, the Crop Reviver Toner. Very nice, by the way. They'll throw in performance boxer briefs, which are super, super comfy, and a travel bag to hold your goodies. Not those goodies, the goodies for your goodies. They throw in those three things. You get the four main pillars of the performance package as well, all for 20% off and free shipping using our code HSHH20. Absolutely no reason not to do it. You will not regret it. Just because it's fall, you're going to be bundling up a little bit more, won't be as hot. Doesn't mean you should stop taking care of yourself. Please go to Manscaped, use our promo code, and help us help you help us. All right, it is time for our draft. This draft, we are doing something we've never done before. Well, we've kind of done bits and pieces, but basically we're trying to build the perfect position player. What that means is, as you guys, I'm sure you guys know, there's five tools for any player. There's contact, or hit for contact, hit for power, defense, speed, and arm strength. So basically what we're going to be doing is drafting traits from players. So for instance, I'm sure this pick will be taken, so it's not really a spoiler. If someone wants to draft Trey Turner's speed and, you know, someone else's power, like that's what we're going to try to do. We're going to mix and match and try to put together our perfect position player. But naturally, it's a draft because it wouldn't be fun otherwise. So we are doing that. I have randomized a list. The order is Amanda with first pick. I wonder who she's going to pick. Ryan, second pick. And then myself, third pick. Snake draft style, as always. And if a certain player, so I use Trey Turner as an example. If someone wants to take Trey Turner's speed, but then someone else wants to take Trey Turner's defense or arm or whatever, they're allowed to do that. You can take multiple traits from the same player if you so desire, but it is not required. Everyone ready?
I think so.
All right, Amanda, start us off.
So this is actually tough to figure out which trait to draft first, because, you know, which one's the most important. It's kind of hard to say. They're all important. I am going to start, however, with defense, because I feel like for power and contact, there's a lot of good choices. But for defense, for me, it is Mookie. There's just web gen after web gen. You can't say enough about what that guy does defensively. And he's got lots of other great traits, too. But he is my number one pick. Mookie Betts' defense.
It's a good pick. I mean, he can also play second base, which is kind of a shocker. Like,
versatility wasn't one of the five, though. So
well, but that applies to defense. Yeah, like if you wanted to pick, you know, Chris Taylor, because he plays seven different positions, I mean, that's certainly a strategy you could go with. I think versatility applies to defense, certainly.
Absolutely. Like,
if you want to try to build an outfielder, I mean, someone who can play all three outfield positions as opposed to just the corner outfielder is valuable. But Mookie Betts, yeah, I think that's a fine number one pick. Ryan, on to you.
My first pick, that was a great pick, Amanda. So with my first pick, I'm going to go with the contact trait, and I am going with Mike Trout for best contact. Mm-hmm. He has more seasons in his career where he's hitting above 310 than he's hitting below 300. In 162 game seasons, he's averaging over 160 hits. He has more seasons with having over 170 hits than he does below. Mike Trout's Mike Trout. The worst season of his career, he hit 281. So, I mean, I feel like I don't really need to explain that one. So, yeah, Mike Trout, I am grabbing with my first pick for contact trait.
Love it.
Another good one. Man. I wanted to go contact as well, but now that you've gone, I'm trying to decide if I want to go contact still or something else. I mean, I have two picks. I can go with something else as well. I'm going to hold off on contact for right now. I'm going to go power just because I get my number one pick and you guys haven't gone that yet. And we talked about this before we started recording. This is when obviously all players are healthy. If you want to say in their prime, whatever, this is when they're at the top of their game, when the trait is used to the best of its ability. And when we're talking power, there's no one stronger than Giancarlo Stanton. Mm-hmm. So I'm definitely taking Giancarlo Stanton. Second pick, man, this is tough.
Can I go contact this time?
I feel like I want to, but I'm going to hold off for right now just because I think I'm going to follow my strategy of just getting my number one pick. And I am going to pick Trey Turner's speed because I think I can't really go wrong there. There's definitely fast guys in baseball. And if you want to dive down a little bit deeper to the guys who are only fast, there's plenty of good options. But Trey Turner's speed and part of the speed is base running. Trey Turner's a great base runner. So I'm going to go power and speed, and I'm set up pretty well.
I like it.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking around which way I want to go. I'm like, do I want to go power?
This is tough. Just power?
It is. It's harder than it seems.
All right. So I'm gonna go with my guy because I know I can still get who I want to take on my third pick. So I'm going power and I'm going the absolute dump truck wagon, Vlad Jr.
Yep.
I almost went with Tatis for that, but Vlad Jr. is just having a stupid year. He's putting up tanks in Toronto, which isn't the most hitter friendly park. Yeah, so I'm going with my boy who leads baseball in slugging with a 611 slugging. Stupid. And yeah, I'm going to Vlad Jr. for slugging.
I like it. It is a good pick. I think I'm going to go for contact next because they're all important, but for me, if I were a GM and I were picking a player, I would go for somebody with great contact over a straight up slugger. So just to get my top guy in this case, well, Trout's my top guy, but he's everybody's top guy. Right. I'm going to go with Soto, who's just he just makes great contact all the time. And I feel like he's got great plate discipline. He obviously takes a ton of walks because they're not really pitching to him right now. But I do feel like he is a guy who just is such a smart hitter. He knows how to put the ball in play. So he is my contact guy. Soto's contact.
Yeah, I was debating that. That was who I was considering with contact because part of contact is you're kind of judge of the strike zone. And obviously we all know Juan Soto is heralded for his strike zone command. I mean, he knows better than most umpires what's strike and what's not. So I don't think that's a pandering pick. I think that's actually a good pick.
All right. So what's next? Trey was obviously my pick for speed. If you're going to go for speed, he is literally the fastest person in baseball. I guess if we're going straight speed, not necessarily base running, I'm going to go Tim LoCastro, who I believe the last time I looked, and this was not today. I was preparing for this draft on the fly and I did not look up their exact speeds, but I believe he was listed as the second fastest the last time I had seen it behind Trey Turner.
I know he's one of the fastest. I don't have those numbers either, but yeah. He's kind of one of the guys I was talking about. Like if you want to just take someone's speed, there's plenty of guys.
It's just like a tenth of a second or two slower than Trey Turner. Now I would take Trey Turner's base running over his, obviously, but the trade is speed. So I'm going to go with that. I'll go with LoCastro.
So just quick Google search. LoCastro has 30.7 feet per second.
Okay.
And I know there was a clip of Trey Turner. I think he got 30.6. So basically they're within spitting distance of each other.
There you go. All right. I'll take it.
Yep. Yeah. All right, Ryan, back to you.
So I am going to go with arm. That's one of them, right? I wrote that down. I just want to double check. And I'm going with someone who has been the best arm in baseball this year, and that is Hunter Renfroe.
Which is so random, by the way.
The guy's a freaking cannon. He is one of the best arms in the league. He has 16 outfield assists, which is one of the best. He also is ranking in the top five in arm strength, according to Fangraphs. And he also has the average hardest balls thrown in from the outfield. The guy has a freaking cannon. And I'm going to nab my guy with Hunter Renfro for arm strength.
Love it.
Yep. Good pick. So since you both have contact done, I'm going to wait on that. And so that leaves me with defense and arm. Man, arm is, I don't want to say it's like subjective, but it's tough. Well, let me go defense first since I have that. Defense, I'm kind of, I was going to go Mookie Betts, but obviously that was the first pick. So I'm going to go with the next guy on my list. No shocker here. He's had a gold glove in like every season he's played. I'm pretty sure he's won a platinum glove before. You know, he's kind of dropped since he left Colorado, but still one of the best defenders in the game and probably in history. And that's Nolan Arenado. Mm-hmm. And I mean, he's only ever played third, but I'm sure he has the flexibility to play anywhere. So definitely going Nolan Arenado. Plus with Trey's speed, like he can cover as much ground as possible. So, I mean, I'm set up pretty nicely there. And then arm, I don't know how I feel about this, but he does have the best arm. I'll do it. All right. I'm going to go Ramon Laureano for arm. He got busted for PEDs, but his arm strength is just absurd. There was a play last year where he's going back on a ball in center field and is at the warning track in Oakland, in the Coliseum, and throws a guy out at first. Like, it's just his arm strength is second to none. I can't really provide like this season stats because obviously he's been suspended, but his arm is probably the strongest in baseball. So if I have that Nolan Arenado's defense, Trey Turner's speed, like nobody, he can play outfield by himself, my guy. So that's where I'm going.
All right. What do I have left here? I've got,
well, Bauer. It's Ryan's pick.
Oh, it's about, it's right. Okay.
Go ahead. Yeah. Relax.
I forgot.
So I have speed and defense left, but since Amanda already went defense, I am not going to go defense. I am going to go speed, and I am going with Shohei Ohtani. He's just around 29 feet per second with speed. Coaches and scouts voted him the fastest base runner in the American League. So I'm going to snag Shohei Ohtani for my speed trait.
People forget how fast he is.
He is a freak.
He is a freak. He's good at everything. Seriously. I think actually he's on my list for power. I have power and arm left to go here. I think, why not? I'm going to go Ohtani for power. I mean, he's leading the league in home runs. Obviously, he does everything.
Well, not anymore. Perez.
I'll say Salvador Perez came out of nowhere in Salvador.
Out of nowhere. But Ohtani's just been doing it all season. You know, he's not currently in the lead, but he's obviously got a ton of power. And I love Ohtani and I want him on my list somewhere. So,
I mean, I fully expect you to go Kyle Schwarber. So
I didn't even think about Schwarber, actually, just because of the lack of consistency. I'd like to say, not like he hasn't done it in the past. I just feel like, you know, he didn't even cross my mind. He wasn't on my list this time. Arm strength is my last one. I haven't looked at the stats on exactly who's, you know, got the most outfield assists and all of that this year, but I think I'll just take Harper. I've always loved Harper's arm. I think he's, you know,
yeah, that's a good pick.
Yeah
I mean, I just without looking at it. Exactly. I just feel like,
well, they probably will because it's Bryce Harper, but
right. And yeah, he went from being the most loved to the most hated man in DC somehow, but
right.
I think he's always been great at gunning runners down. And when he played here, one of my absolute favorite things to watch was an outfield assist from Bryce Harper. So I'll take his arm strength. So I think that's all for me, right? I've got everybody.
Yep. That's it. So, Ryan in true Ryan fashion is going defense last. So Ryan, once you round out your player.
Absolutely. There are two people who are above the league when it comes to defense. Nick took one of them at Nolan Arenado. I am going Matt Chapman for my defense pick. Yep. He's a two-time gold glove winner, two-time platinum glove winner. He also won the Wilson Award for best overall defender in baseball. He's okay offensively, but he is an absolute freak defensively. He might statistically be better than Nolan Arenado, which is saying something because Nolan Arenado is also a freak defensively. So my last pick closing out is Matt Chapman for the defensive trait.
It's a good pick.
It is a very good pick. All right, so what I have left is contact, which is ironic because I almost went contact first. There's a couple of guys like I was considering, and just the nature of this draft, people are only going to read names. They're not going to think, they're not even going to consider traits. Right? They're only going to consider names, but I'm trying to build the best contact or trying to get the best contact hitter. And there's one guy who's kind of been eye-popping. Well, I'll say some honorable mentions. I considered Michael Brantley. I mean, Anthony Rendon, Juan Soto, I was considering before he got taken. Tommy La Stella, who I was trying to recruit to the Nats all offseason. He's up there too. But there's one guy who literally just only makes contact, doesn't have a lot of power, and that's David Fletcher. He was like a K rate below 10, contact rate above 90%. Like, it's just absurd how much contact he makes. He got like a 6-year contract extension just because he makes so much contact. I almost went DJ LeMahieu too, but I think because of the down year he's having, that will kind of like sway voters. So I'm going to go David Fletcher, even though a lot of people probably don't even know who David Fletcher is. But
yeah, I was going to say, you probably just lost yourself this draft competition because nobody will know who that is, but it's a good, it's a neat pick. I like deep on it.
I'm staying true to myself.
I dig it.
So, all right, to recap everyone's picks, Amanda has Mookie Betts defense, Juan Soto's contact, Tim LoCastro's speed, Shohei Ohtani's power, and Bryce Harper's arm. Oof,
that's a good one.
Ryan has Mike Trout's contact, Vlad Jr.'s power. Jesus.
Hunter, can you imagine?
Yeah, Hunter Renfro's arm, Shohei Ohtani's speed, and Matt Chapman's defense. And I have Giancarlo Stanton's power, Trey Turner's speed, Nolan Arenado's defense, Ramon Laureano's arm, and David Fletcher's contact. So those graphics will be posted, I don't know, probably sometime today or tomorrow. And obviously you guys can vote, because what's a draft if we don't vote on who wins? So be on the lookout for that. But that pretty much does it for today's episode. So we are going to wrap, as we always do, with our one big thing. You guys got anything before we go?
Win from the Washington football team last night. It was ugly, but they did it. I'll take it.
One big thing. pretty standard of you to pick a non-baseball thing. So
exactly,
you're being true to yourself.
I'm staying true to myself as well. Exactly.
Yeah. Ryan, you got anything?
Same thing as always. Keep enjoying September baseball. The MVP race in the National League is interesting. The both wildcard races are fascinating. No one wants in the National League. No one wants to lose in the American League. It's just fun. Just keep enjoying it. It's a great time for baseball right now.
My one big thing was I was going to bring up Salvador Perez. We kind of brought him up just naturally anyways, but he just came out of nowhere with the season he's having. He's always been kind of known for his defense and his game calling and his rapport with pitchers more than his offense. Not that he's ever been a schlub offensively, but certainly not to the level we're seeing now. He's tied for the league lead in home runs, 110 RBIs on a terrible Royals team. And that just tells you something, because RBIs are a team stat. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he has 110 RBIs, I don't have his batting average with runners in scoring position in front of me, but clearly he's taking the most of any opportunity he does get, again, because the Royals team is not very good. So Salvador Perez is the one thing keeping them from pure embarrassment. But he deserves some recognition. He's not going to be an MVP candidate or anything like that, but he is having a all-time season for catcher. I believe he tied, was it Johnny Bench, for the most home runs in a season all-time by a catcher right now. So he's one away from that record. So that's something we might not see again for at least for a while. Obviously, we've talked about plenty on the show when catchers aren't a necessity to have an offensively gifted catcher. You kind of take what you get if they play good defense, and Salvador Perez is kind of the exception because he plays great defense, but he's also phenomenal offensively this year. So just wanted to shine some recognition on him But it was pretty funny. The Athletic said as he's having the best season ever, and everyone just ruined them. I don't know if you guys saw that, because as great as Salvador Perez has been, he is not better than like Joe Mauer's MVP season or a couple others throughout the rest of that.
He's being outshined by some of the other performances around the league this year. It's just, there's so many unbelievable things happening in baseball right now. Like the Nats suck, and that's hard to take as a Nats fan, but if you're just a baseball fan, I mean, there's so much awesome stuff to be paying attention to and watching right now.
Right. And that's kind of the reason we've been promoting the show and our site the way we have over the past month or so, is because even though we're not all that exciting to watch, I mean, the Nats just love dropping two of three in these series. there's so much going on around baseball you can still be invested in. It's like you're doing yourself a disservice if you're just living and dying with what the Nats do. Like,
because you're just dying.
Other stuff.
You're just dying.
Right. So, yeah, there's a ton of like individual performances that need to be recognized. Like Amanda just said, Shohei, Vladdy, Salvador Perez is another one. I mean, there's plenty. So people need to get caught up, especially with the playoffs right around the corner. But
indeed.
All right, that does it for today's episode. Thank you for listening. Be sure to check out the draft results on Twitter. Vote for who you think has the best player. Be sure to check out the site, like I mentioned, at halfstreethighheat.com. Articles coming out every single day. We're even doing like two or three a day at this point. We are pumping out articles on a hot streak, so definitely keep an eye out on that if you're craving some baseball content. You can also follow us on Twitter. Follow the main show. Or the show account at Half Street High Heat, Ryan at We Are All Shaq, Amanda at AWhite7877, and myself at Nationals Ace. Thank you for listening, and until next time, let's go Nats.
There's a new breeze blowing off the banks of the Potomac. A new team's mowing down the ranks of their opponents. The Nationals are smashing balls, so that the commentator who has the calls has passed the wall to see you later. Let's go Nats. We've got a game to play. We're gonna win today. Let's go Nats. We're gonna score for score. We're gonna win for sure. So call your local congressman. We need another monument. The Nats are rolling on the wind. We're holding D.C. Let's go Nats. By the early light of dawn, well, you can see they're running scared, cause the kinds of bombs we're launching are bursting in the air. Tell the Library of Congress that they might not want to look, cause we're putting curly W's in every book.